AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it.
Today we are diving into, well, a pretty intense stack of political sources.
Yeah, high stakes stuff.
Absolutely. We're looking at the raw power plays behind some major conflicts. Think a potential government shutdown that's maybe about more than just funding.
And attempts to literally rewrite recent history, like Jan 6.
Exactly. And then we'll pivot and contrast all that domestic chaos with how some other democracies seem to run things, maybe a bit smoother, especially elections.
Right. Our mission really is to understand the why behind the immediate leverage plays here.
And gain some perspective. See what's structural versus just, you know, the daily drama.
Precisely. Moving beyond the spectacle to look at systemic health, or maybe the lack of it, compared to places with different frameworks.
Okay, so let's start with that present danger. We are right on the brink, potentially, of another government shutdown this week.
Classic game of chicken, Washington style.
And pressure is already on.
Yeah.
Right? The Democratic base is telling Senator Schumer, don't cave this time.
Yeah, the messaging is loud. And look, the early polling seems pretty clear on blame.
Who's likely to get it?
Republicans. I mean, the Democrats have a simple line here. The GOP controls the White House, the Senate, the House.
All three.
All three. And yet they, quote, can't even fund the government. It's a straightforward argument about basic governing competence.
Okay, but here's where it gets, I think, really interesting, based on the sources. This isn't just about budget numbers for everyone involved.
No, for some, it's seen as a moment, an opportunity.
Let's talk about Russell Vought. He's the main author of Project 2025, right?
That's him. And it's important we quickly explain Project 2025 for listeners. It's this huge, comprehensive, conservative plan aimed at radically reshaping the federal government, the executive branch, if there's a transition.
So Vought isn't just thinking about political strategy here.
The source describes him more as a policy wonk. And he's apparently quite open about seeing a shutdown as, and this is a quote, a wonderful opportunity to decimate the government.
Decimate, that's a strong word. What does that mean in practice?
It means permanent damage. He's pushing for permanent reductions in force RIF.
Okay, so RIFs,
yeah,
that's different from the usual furloughs, right? Furloughs are temporary layoff.
Exactly. Furloughs mean people eventually come back when the funding is sorted. RIF means you're permanently firing federal workers.
The job itself is eliminated.
The job ceases to exist. The person is gone. The position is gone. And critically, all that institutional knowledge just evaporates.
Wow. So who or what is being targeted?
The sources point directly at programs that help low and middle income Americans.
Like what specifically?
Think about the Administration for Children and Families, aid for low income heating and cooling LIHEAP, and those vital preschool development grants.
So basic support systems.
Yeah, the source uses pretty stark language. These would be chopped to mincemeat. The goal seems to be shrinking government by crippling its ability to provide that kind of aid.
Okay, so Team Schumer obviously gets the stakes here. They've set up what's described as a private war room.
Right. Coordinating with outside allies' unions, progressive groups like the PCCC, which focuses a lot on economic issues.
And their strategy is.
Treat it like a campaign. They're crafting talking points, the main one being Democrats do not want a shutdown and actively looking for what they call storytellers.
People who can explain the real world impact.
Exactly. Put a human face on potential Medicaid cuts, for instance. Make it concrete for people.
And there's a personal political angle for Schumer, too, isn't there?
Absolutely. If he's seen as giving in again, you immediately hear Lauder talk about a primary challenge in 2028, perhaps from someone like AOC. The pressure is definitely on him internally.
Okay, let's shift gears from this immediate conflict to something maybe even more fundamental, controlling the narrative of the past.
Ah, the Orwell quote comes to mind, doesn't it?
It really does. Who controls the past controls the future. Who controls the present controls the past.
And that perfectly frames what House Republicans are doing now with January 6th.
They're setting up a new committee on Jan 6th.
Yes. Explicitly to redo the investigation. The stated aim is, well, to rewrite history.
Rewrite it how? What's the news story supposed to be?
Basically, shift the blame away from former President Trump. Point the finger anywhere else. Democrats, the FBI, maybe Antifa, Speaker Emerita Pelosi. Anyone but him.
And Speaker Johnson is on board with this.
Reportedly pleased, yeah. He's quoted saying the previous committee's work was rigged.
So key members are already signaling they want to overturn the central finding of the original committee.
Absolutely. Folks like Loudermilk, Higgins, they seem focused on hitting, like you said, the UNDO button on the conclusion that Trump's rhetoric was a cause of the riot.
Could this backfire? Does bringing it all up again actually help them?
Well, that's the potential Streisand effect the source mentions, right?
Yeah.
Meaning, by trying to suppress or change the narrative, you actually draw more attention to the original event. It reminds people, especially independents in the middle, who didn't like what they saw on TV that day.
All right. Reminds them of the actual images,
yeah,
of violence.
Exactly. It might not play out the way they hope with the broader electorate.
And it sets up some internal drama, too, doesn't it? With Representative Raskin?
Yeah, Jamie Raskin. He was on the original Jan 6 committee, and he's going to be on this new one, too.
So he gets a front row seat.
And he's already asking, basically, okay, which conspiracy theory are you guys actually going to land on? Is it Antifa this week? The FBI next week? They kind of need to pick one story and stick to it,
right?
That'd
be fascinating to watch that unfold. Okay, let's turn now to a different kind of power play. Retribution aimed at the corporate world.
Ah, yes, the Microsoft situation.
Trump demanding Microsoft fire Lisa Monaco.
Yes, the former deputy AG who supervised the prosecution in his classified documents case. The source presents it as pretty straightforward retribution.
And the leverage being used is stark.
Extremely direct. It's basically hint, hint, Microsoft.
You have many government contracts that could be canceled on a whim if you do not obey me. Using those contracts as a weapon.
It really does sound like corporate blackmail, plain and simple. But the question is, how credible is that threat, really?
Could the government realistically just switch off Microsoft?
Well, that's where it gets nuanced. It depends on the type of contract.
Okay.
Contracts for, say, new software projects, maybe those could be shifted perhaps to a competitor like Oracle. It would be disruptive, but doable.
But what about the core stuff, like Windows, Office?
Now that would be, as the source puts it, an extreme disruption. Imagine the federal government trying to migrate tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of computers off Windows and Office overnight.
Yeah, switching to Linux or something else across the board.
Yeah.
That's a massive undertaking. Months, maybe years of effort.
Exactly. So while maybe not impossible, it's disruptive enough to be a very potent threat, especially against a big publicly traded company like Microsoft that cares about stability and, you know, public perception. Boycotts, shareholder reaction.
It just creates this incredible contradiction around free speech, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. The same person who expressed outrage over being banned from Ike's Twitter.
For inciting violence.
Is now actively trying to pressure a private company to fire someone and even going after critics like comedians.
But how does the public feel about this kind of pressure?
Well, there's a new poll, The Economist YouGov, that sheds some light. It shows a really large majority. 68% of Americans find it unacceptable for the government to pressure broadcasters or publishers to remove content or shows.
So broad opposition to government censorship.
Very broad. Interestingly, even among Republicans, a majority opposes it. There may be a bit more ambivalent if it's their guy doing the pressuring, but still, the baseline principle against government interference holds strong for most people.
Okay, so it's clear the immediate focus, the daily headlines, are driven by these threats, personal fights, shutdown deadlines.
Yeah, immediate conflicts, retribution, attempts to rewrite history. But does focusing only on that obscure the bigger picture, the underlying rules?
And that's the perfect pivot. Let's talk about those rules. Our sources frame the U.S. election system as, quote, American exceptionalism, and not in a good way.
Ouch. But maybe accurate when you look globally.
So we've got five potential reforms, things actually used successfully in other democracies. That would be completely revolutionary here.
Let's tick through them. First one, ban all corporate campaign donations. Just get big corporate money out entirely.
Is that common elsewhere?
Very. It's illegal in many established democracies. Canada, France, Japan, just to name a few. In Canada, zero corporate contributions allowed. Zip. And individual limits are really low, too, around $7,750 Canadian.
Wow. Okay, second point.
Limit the length of campaigns. Our perpetual cycle is a huge driver of cost.
How short are we talking elsewhere?
Well, get this. Japan, the official campaign is 12 days. France, 14 days for presidential runs. The UK, usually 5 to 6 weeks.
Weeks, not years. So the proposal here is simple.
Pretty much. Ban campaign spending before, say, January 1st of the actual election year. Drastically shortens the paid campaign season.
All right, third idea. Spending caps. Put actual limits on how much can be spent.
Again, very common. Canada, France, the UK all have caps. Canada's limit for national parties in 2021 was roughly $30 million.
Mm.
Compare that to U.S. presidential spending.
It's orders of magnitude different.
Mm-hmm.
But we have the Supreme Court issue here, right? Citizens United and all that. Spending money equals speech.
That's the huge barrier in the U.S. But the source points out a potential constitutional workaround.
Which is?
Congress actually has the power under Article 3, Section 2, Paragraph 2 of the Constitution to strip the Supreme Court of jurisdiction in certain types of cases.
Wait, Congress can tell the Supreme Court you can't rule on this?
In specific areas, yes. It's called jurisdiction stripping. So Congress could theoretically pass campaign finance reform laws and include a provision saying the Supreme Court can't review those specific laws.
Effectively making the law immune to being overturned by SCOTUS on free speech grounds.
That's the theory. It's legally complex, politically explosive, but constitutionally permissible, according to this analysis.
Fascinating. Okay, fourth reform idea.
Public funding of campaigns, taking the reliance off private donors.
How does that work in practice?
Different models. Sweden provides something like 80-90% of party funding through public grants. Germany uses a matching system for smaller individual donations. The point is to reduce the influence of big money.
Makes sense. And the fifth one, this one feels really different for the U.S.
Mandatory voting.
Making it illegal not to vote.
Essentially, yes.
Where?
Requiring eligible citizens to participate. Around 27 countries do this. Australia is probably the best known example.
How do they enforce it?
Usually with small fines for not voting without a valid excuse. It's not about jail time. It's about establishing a civic duty.
Wow. That seems so counter to the American idea of voting as a right you can choose not to exercise. What's the claimed benefit?
It's a potential game changer for who participates. It typically boosts turnout from maybe 60% in voluntary systems like ours up to 90% or more.
90%.
Yeah. And critically, that extra 30% or so often represents less intensely partisan voters, people who are busy, maybe less engaged daily, more moderate.
So it brings in the middle.
Exactly. It potentially increases the electorate by half with people who aren't diehard partisans. Politicians then arguably have to appeal more to that center ground rather than just playing to their base.
But there's a patch, right? You can't just mandate voting if it's hard to vote.
Absolutely crucial condition. Mandatory voting has to be paired with making voting incredibly easy. Think long voting periods, like 30 days, maybe vote by mail standard, plenty of locations. Accessibility is key.
Is there proof this linkage matters?
Yeah, Venezuela provides a sort of reverse case study. They used to have mandatory voting and turnout was around 83%. They got rid of it and participation dropped to 61%. Make it optional and hard and people drop out.
Okay, let's quickly touch on a couple of other political maneuvers mentioned. NYC Mayor Eric Adams dropping out.
Yes, quite abruptly. And the source suggests Trump is now trying to maneuver things by getting the official Republican candidate, Curtis Sliwa, to also drop out.
Why would he do that?
To try and create a clear head-to-head race between the progressive candidate, Zohran Mamdani, and Andrew Cuomo, perhaps seeing Cuomo as easier to beat or work with down the line.
Any suggestion of what Sliwa might get in return?
Speculation mentioned head of the Voice of America as a potential carrot. Pure speculation at this point, though.
And quickly, Maryland gerrymandering. Governor Wes Moore.
Yeah, the Democratic governor there apparently has a chance to redraw the map and potentially eliminate the state's only Republican House seat held by Freedom Caucus chair Andy Harris.
But he's hesitating.
Dawdling, as the source puts it, possibly concerned about the state constitution's requirement for districts to be compact in form, which could invite legal challenges.
And finally, Rudy Giuliani settling with Dominion.
Yes, settling that huge $1.3 billion defamation lawsuit. The terms aren't clear.
Especially given his other massive judgment, the $148 million to the Georgia election workers, and apparent financial issues.
Right. So speculation is either Dominion wanted to avoid further legal costs, or maybe a wealthy ally helped bail him out. We don't know the details.
Okay, so wrapping this all up, we've looked at these immediate, intense conflicts. The shutdown fight, the pressure on Microsoft, the Jan 6th rewrite.
Often driven by very personal motives, retribution, or specific ideological goals, like Vought's desire to decimate government functions.
But then you contrast that with the structural discussion. These fundamental reforms used elsewhere, campaign finance limits, shorter campaigns, public funding, even mandatory voting.
Things that change the actual rules of the political game, aiming for broader participation and less influence from concentrated money or power.
So here's the final provocative thought, maybe, for you listening. What does it really say about the U.S. political system right now?
Yeah, that we're so caught up in the immediate drama, who gets blamed for the shutdown this week, who's attacking who.
Well, these fundamental structural rules of the game, how campaigns are funded, who gets to vote easily, even how much power the courts have over political questions seem almost untouchable, almost off the table for serious discussion.
Is maybe the biggest knowledge gap in American politics simply not realizing what's actually possible, what other successful democracies are already doing differently? Food for thought.